Chapter 16, Seeking and Finding. What the Beloved knew and taught, science repeats, through understanding dearly sought, with fierce heartbeats. Mary Baker Eddy, 1893. Originally, the third picture in Christ in Christmas, titled Seeking and Finding, portrayed the woman sitting at the table with a handkerchief to her eyes. But Mrs. Eddy had Gilman recall it from the Concord Monitor office to be changed, saying, "The idea of the woman weeping was wrong." In September, when prints were being made, there was a question as to whether the serpent should be included in the picture. On September 11th, she wrote to Dr. Foster Eddy as follows, "I have decided to have 500 pictures finished with the serpent on them, and then I can do as God directs about putting them in my first edition of 1,000 copies. Have written this to artist." When Christ in Christmas was finally published, the first 80 copies were without the serpent. But Mrs. Eddy withdrew that version, and all subsequent editions included the serpent. Mrs. Eddy had wrought wonders with James Gilman in producing the 11 illustrations for her poem, but even so they fell short of what she envisioned. She wrote again to Dr. Foster Eddy about Seeking and Finding on the 13th of September. "I would like to have the figure you are going to see about changed in position thus. Sitting with right arm on the table, pen in hand, paper before it, and the eyes looking, oh, looking as if heaven had come to view, and the whole being as if absorbed and enwrapped. It can be done, and a real artist would do it. I would give money for it, and what would not my students give?" Gilman captured some of this expression in a revised version of Christian Science Healing at a later date. But Seeking and Finding was never changed to portray more satisfactorily Mrs. Eddy's concept. Seeking and Finding is more than a title to one of the illustrations in Christ in Christmas. It is a title that could truly be applied to Mrs. Eddy's entire earth experience. She was ever seeking to know and to do the will of God, and she did find His will. She did hear His voice, guiding her footsteps in leading the children of Israel. Every letter she wrote to a student bore evidence of her finding, and these letters not only helped the recipient at the time, but continue to help students today who are seeking to find the way. Early in September, she had written to her directors, "My beloved students, I thank you for the tender testimonial you and your church have seen fit to engrave on a tablet of stone. May the God of Israel support, guide, and prosper you in this Christian endeavor, which means much to the present and future generations, and will perpetuate the testimony to what each one of us has done. Yours in Christ, Mary Baker G. Eddy." The students near the leader tried to follow her instructions and to fulfill her wishes. However, she was constantly changing direction as the winds of God blew. So what was right this morning might be wrong this afternoon. Though she could change direction instantly or redo work already done, Her students found this a very difficult assignment. As a result, there were a good many rebukes, followed by self-justification, self-pity, often desertion, and sometimes remorse. In September of 1893, both Julia Field King and James Gilman were full of remorse for hasty actions. To the former, Mrs. Eddy wrote on the 5th of September, "We cannot carry along with Christ evil speaking, envy, deceit, or conceit, for Christ will either leave us or take these and all other errors out of us by the suffering they bring. Now, dear one, remember, I cannot save you. If I could, I would, from sinning and suffering. But we can hold guard over our own evil inclinations by continued watchfulness and prayer, and thus seeking to put them down, will do it. This I beg, that you will keep up your severe struggles to accomplish this until I can welcome you back to your mother in Israel." A few weeks later, she wrote again to Mrs. King. "Was it not disobedience to the Master's last request, to his sleeping disciples, which left them without the bridegroom, to mourn their disobedience, to return to their nets, to battle alone, until they were put to death? But the prophecy is contradictory. If the Christianity of our cause is so dependent on person as to disappear with one individual, to scoff at obeying that one is to hinder the progress of Christianity, if indeed disobedience is thereby enforced. My letter to you, pointing to a time when it might be well for you to return to Boston, needs an amendment. I learn something new continually. One of the many things is that that city is not the place for such a sensitive to mortal mind influence as you are at present. Sometime I hope you will master this. But, dear student, the secret of being thus victorious all lies with yourself. A state of perfect honesty is a fortress, impregnable, to this evil influence. God always has, always will, cause all things to subserve the welfare of such a state of mind." Gilman's remorse was occasioned by his thoughtlessness in adjusting the white banner flying from Mrs. Eddy's balcony on the morning he and Mr. Brown were endeavoring to take some pictures of Pleasant View. In a state of despair, he wrote an apology, deploring the almost helplessness of his case, to which she responded immediately, "Dear seeker, be of good cheer. All thy shortcomings are forgiven for that day. I had a glorious season with God. You are not only seeking but gaining slowly. Seeing your errors always presages their destruction, and like a fever raging before it ceases, the error looks bigger, even when becoming less." Her September letter to a student in Wisconsin, who had suffered extensive losses in a raging forest fire, is not at hand, but the healing effect of its tender sympathy is evident in his response of October 1st. "Beloved leader and teacher, our hearts rejoiced on receipt of your message of love and sympathy It was indeed a mark of your unceasing love and care in watching over your children in divine science. We can truly say we have spiritual riches as revealed to us through science and health, which the world cannot give and the world cannot take it away. As we beheld the claim of destructive wind approaching, we could say with the prophet, God is not in that wind, for God is love. And as we gazed at the seeming smoke and ruin of so much of our worldly possessions, we could also say, God is not in that fire, for God is love. And we tried to realize that, though all things material should pass away, His word could not pass away. We hope we can say in like sincerity with Job, although error try to slay us, yet we will trust in God, good. Thanking you 1,000 times for your loving counsel and sympathy, I am your loving student and disciple, H. MacDonald. The message to Hugh MacDonald was sympathetic, but the one to the directors of the church about the same time was imperative. Do not delay one other day to lay the foundation of our church. The season will shut in upon you, perhaps, and the frost hinder the work. God is with you. Thrust in the spade, October 1st, 1893, and advertise in next number of journal that you have begun to build His temple for the worship and service of divine love, the living God. This came just before the first annual meeting of the Mother Church on the 3rd of October. In the first year, the church had grown from its original 12 members to a membership of 1,545. On the 11th of October, the leader sent William B. Johnson another message for her church, but this one was not concerned with brick and mortar. My dear student, I have revised for the last time my tenets. I wished to make clearer my meaning and have. Please circulate no more of the old one and print this at once. It will pay in the good done and the demand for the new one. The following February, she saw that her tenets belonged in the cornerstone of her church, but not the cornerstone that men were laying with hands. She wrote to Mr. Johnson, quote, I have thought best to have you assign the copyright of the tenets to me, and I will put them in Science and Health for safety. End quote. In the fall of 1893, Reverend Easton was fulfilling Mrs. Eddy's expectations. His sermon, entitled The Law of Spiritual Growth, which was printed in the October Journal, ended as follows. In strict science, there is no law of spiritual growth, because there never was any law of spiritual decay. Man does not become spiritual. He only wakens out of the dream of materiality and realizes more and more that he is spiritual, perfect and intact, and always was. When Philip said, Show us the Father, and it sufficeth us, Jesus' answer implied that Philip, in the reality of his being, was already in the presence of the Father as much as he was himself. Spiritual growth then means the process which seems to go on as mortals awaken from the dream of sense and realize the eternal facts of being. Mrs. Eddy wrote him a lovely letter of appreciation for this sermon, in which she said, quote, God bless you, and every day show you a little more of infinite love. Just your daily bread, more you will not digest, end quote. Reverend Easton responded right away, and Mrs. Eddy gave his letter to the journal for publication. My beloved teacher, I was helped and cheered, not a little, by your most welcome letter of the 19th of this month. Some healing demonstrations were reported to me as resulting from the preaching of the sermon you referred to. I also had letters from scientists who read it in the journal. I think that you will be interested to hear of the demonstration of a woman who recently has begun to attend our church. In belief, she is poor, and one night the rain poured through her leaking roof. She remembered a sermon in which Paul thanked God in the midst of a shipwreck. So, she then and there denied the evidence of the senses and realized that in truth she lacked nothing. Next day, she met a relative whom she had not seen for a long time. He asked particularly about her, and before he left her, told her to have the roof and house put in thorough repair and fill her cellar with coal and wood for the winter, and send the bills to him. Another woman, 63 years old, who is a washerwoman, heard a few months ago of Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures, and took her last dollar to buy it, leaving only 10 cents in her purse. She says that the money has been made up to her from unexpected sources many times over. She walks several miles to the Friday evening meetings after washing all day and walks back and puts the 10 cents saved from car fares in the contribution box. She is a refined-looking little woman, and it is wonderful to hear her read the references from Science and Health. She does it with such fervor and earnestness, and yet so quietly and reverently. Her face is an inspiration to me when I am preaching. She came to us from the Unitarian Church. I am treating absently a physician and professor in Zurich, Switzerland. He was a distinguished specialist on insanity and is now in belief, hopelessly insane. His wife has heard of Christian Science and through her sister asked me to treat him. The doctors have given him up and he takes no medicine of any kind. Your affectionate student. Rather than appending Reverend Easton's name to this letter in the journal, it merely had initials, but instead of DAE, it read EDA. Was this just a printing error? 2 days following this letter from Reverend Easton, Mrs. Eddy responded to a new student from the South, a very young man who had suffered ill health from childhood. When Edward Everett Norwood's mother was pronounced dying of an incurable disease in the spring of 1893, a friend introduced them to Science and Health. The young man literally devoured the book, reading day and night. In a few weeks' time, he realized that he was completely healed, and his mother was greatly improved. He wrote a fervently grateful letter, which he addressed to, quote, Reverend Mary Baker Eddy, thou who art highly favored among women, end quote, stating that he desired to do something to show his gratitude. Very probably, Mrs. Eddy sensed the need of this sincere student the following fall, for Mr. Norwood's mother subsequently rejected Christian Science and passed away on the 3rd of November. The leader's letter reached the young man just 2 days before his mother's decease. Pleasant View, Concord, New Hampshire, October 25th, 1893. Mr. E. Norwood, Memphis, Tennessee. Dear Sir, your favor interests me. Nothing is more desirable than to learn of those in early life choosing the good part. The sketch of yourself was highly gratifying. It is quite common to hear of those healed by reading Science and Health. Are you thinking of making Christian Science a study and practice? The spirit of love you manifest inclines me to ask this. Please write again and tell me how you are getting along, and if you know Mrs. Mims of Atlanta, Georgia. Very kindly, Mary B. G. Eddy. Before this time, Gilman had completed his work for Mrs. Eddy's illustrated poem. The experience of working with Mrs. Eddy had given him tremendous growth spiritward. On the 25th of October, he wrote, "It came to me this morning what obedience really is. Obedience is not to look to matter for a single thing, but to God for everything. To do less was to imply that there is lack in God in the proportion of our looking to matter for the fulfillment of our desires. We thus dishonor God and thereby incur the burdensome sense of divine displeasure. In this light, I see the import of Mrs. Eddy's repeated chiding of me for being so disobedient. I see I have been disobedient nearly all the time, without indeed consciously knowing it. To try to compass the execution of a picture in mortal strength is to look away from God as the only source, and so to be disobedient. I am greatly rejoicing in the perception of this truth. To have seen and maintained this truth earlier would have greatly facilitated his work for the leader. But what remained to be done now was between Mrs. Eddy and the printers and binders. That is, what remained to be done for the publishing of Christ in Christmas. What truly remained to be done was what she hoped her illustrated poem would do for the world. In other words, elucidate the true sense of her life and her work. In 1893, the world understood her not at all, and even among her closest students, there was more confusion and gossip than understanding. Perhaps Edward A. Kimball came closer than most to understanding the leader. In a letter to him in October, Mrs. Eddy wrote, "For the world to understand me in my true light and life, would do more for our cause than aught else could. This I learned from the fact that the enemy tries harder to hide these two things from the world than to win any other points. Also, Jesus' life and character in their first appearing were treated in like manner. And I regret to see that loyal students are not more awake to this great demand in their measures to meet the enemy's tactics. As late as 1977, a historian wrote that nearly every public attack on Christian Science began with, quote, a pejorative account of Mrs. Eddy's life and character, end quote, as its basis for interpretation of Christian Science. Though the world has been blinded and misled by the enemy's tactics, Edward A. Kimball was not. On the 23rd of November, he wrote to Mrs. Eddy, "My sense of this whole effort is that so far as this age is concerned, there is an identity between Christian Science and its founder. They cannot be separated in human consciousness and have good results follow. The message and the messenger are so closely allied that human thought is safely poised only when it includes the delicate discernment of, quote, God's interpretation to man, end quote, really means. It will soon be 100 years since Mr. Kimball penned those words. But do Christian Scientists today perceive as Kimball did the identity between Christian Science and its founder? Do they know that to understand the founder in her true light and life would do more for the cause and for their own understanding of science than aught else could? Do they know that Christ in Christmas in poem and pictures depicts this true light and life of Mary Baker Eddy? It is an interesting and helpful study for the true student seeking to find the way.